Hey everybody, JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce, another Baseball America Prospect podcast, and this time we're in person, and Jeff,
yes.
I gotta be honest, it's great to see you. The effort that is involved with us being in person does feel like 10 times more than when we're doing this over, you know, over the internet.
Yeah, certainly with this one, now that we have the video element, it was different when, you know, we're recording Rule 5, you know, recap podcast.
Put a mic in front of us and we
exactly,
go.
And we're in a hotel room. We just go. So this was, you know, a little more technical in terms of being able to make everything work. But yeah. I think it's going to be a great product. So yeah.
Jeff came down. We are getting ready to head to the futures game, to the draft. I'll stick around for the All-Star game as well.
Sure.
So we will be headed down to Atlanta for that. So it's a very fun week for us.
Yes.
A lot of work the last couple weeks, but
yeah.
That's what we're going to talk about today because. Yes, I know. Okay. We should not have started those division by division breakdowns right before futures game and top 100 update and all that. Because we're going to put that on pause again, probably for 2 more weeks, to be honest, because we're going to have futures game and all that next week as well. But we are going to talk this week about we just updated our top 30s. In addition to the top 100, which we talked about last week, we updated top 30s. And check it out at baseballamerica.com. We have updated top 30 prospect list. With scouting reports, tools, grades, all that,
mm-hmm.
900 players, that's all up at baseballamerica.com. But today we are going to talk about some of the players who stand out, who stood out as we made those updates to the reporting,
exactly.
Our reporting and all. And Jeff, I'll kind of let you just kind of start off by taking us to, as I hit our little rising prospects banner, who's one of the first ones? All these, by the way, are going to be players who are not top 100 prospects.
Yeah.
So we're not going to talk about anyone who moved up in the 100 or whatever. We covered that last week. Connor Griffin and all that stuff. But this week, we are talking about non-top 100 prospects who have moved up. Who are you going to start out with?
Yeah, I'm going to start out with Bryce Meyer, right-handed pitcher from the Astros. It feels like every single year, we're sort of sitting here this time of year, talking about Astros college draftee, most of the time from outside the top 5 rounds, who takes a big step forward.
Like last year at this time, you know, we were talking about a guy making his major league debut who's now a Blue Jay.
Yes.
Yeah, I just blanked on the name.
Jake Bloss.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I feel like he's sort of this year's Jake Bloss. And there's always stuff kind of lurking in this system, particularly on the pitching side, that's a little bit better than what the amateur or even the prospect pedigree is once they're in. There's guys that just always take big steps forward. I mean, you know, Ronald Blanco, I think, is just such a great example because it was a 29-year-old sort of roll 30, roll 40 reliever that then became kind of like a 50-55 pitcher over the last couple of years. Of course, it ended up having an injury. Bloss, I think Meyer kind of falls into that same category, might be even a better draft sleeper. This was a 16th-round pick. Couple years in JUCO, gets to Missouri in 2023, has Tommy John surgery, misses all that season, returns in 2024, isn't great against SEC competition. I would also say that if we're talking SEC in terms of dev houses, all that sort of thing, Missouri's probably on the lower side of the scale. I don't think I'm saying anything out of pocket there. Comes into the organization and he's rocketed up a few levels, made his double A debut for Corpus Christi last week and pitched really, really well. I think he's a guy that, you know, probably isn't going to debut like Bloss this year, but could be in the picture for next year, and certainly somebody that pushed his way into the top 10 and could keep climbing. I think this is a major green arrow, and if we sit here in a month in the next update and he jumps over an Ethan Pecco or an A.J. Blubaugh, I don't think that's crazy, especially considering he's down in the upper minors and has an opportunity to kind of show that his performance is better than those guys.
And the thing that stands out with that is that coming into the season, he wasn't even close to those guys, was he?
No. I mean, I think he was 30 on the handbook list, and then I think got pushed off with some international signings, Kevin Alvarez being a big one, another big mover on our list, and I think someone that will be in the top 100 very shortly. Might be the first big Astros prospect in quite a while if we don't consider Cam Smith, because he was never really much of a prospect.
Yeah, Cam Smith's total number of Astros minor league games is zero.
Zero, exactly. So
big development success story for him.
Exactly. So it was a matter of him just graduating. But I think in this system, you know, Alvarez is another name to keep in mind. But for me, Meyer is such a great story. He's a 16th-round pick and has really made good in his first year. Now he's a top 10 guy, and they even have some other draft sleepers from last year, like a Joseph Sullivan, who's 11, who's really interesting. So system's getting a little bit better. They got some picks in the next week. It'll be interesting to see what they do. And they're not picking at the total back end of the first this year. It's like 21, I think, is what their pick is.
And a couple of years ago, we were saying they had to wait till day two to pick. So
quite often. So it should be interesting to see what they do this year. And they had a really good draft last year, first year under scouting director Cam Pendino, too. So really interesting story there and kind of what's developing on the scouting side, I think, for the Astros, which is a departure for this organization.
Well, so my first one is going to be Ty Johnson, right-hander with the Rays. Speaking of guys who were traded from the Cubs, we had that with Cam Smith. We also had that with Ty Johnson. Johnson came over in the Isaac Paredes trade last year, one of multiple players that the Rays acquired. Rays really did bring in a lot of talent at the deadline last year. And in Johnson's case, he was kind of a guy I believe was on the back of our 30 last year, kind of what you're talking about. Got bumped off because of really more of like other guys that added, other guys joining, not like, oh, Ty Johnson looks terrible or anything like that. It was just like that was really a list where it's like, oh, there's not enough room if you're going 30 deep. Has really pitched quite well at AA Montgomery for them. And the thing that does stand out with him, you and I were talking about it before we started recording, it's kind of a funky delivery. There's like, it kind of comes out of the kind of, you know, almost like, you don't pick up, if you're a hitter, you don't pick the ball up pretty quickly. It's a little bit unusual. Multiple pitches, but I would say if you said like it's kind of a reliever mix in the long run, probably like I would kind of equate him. They're very different. Mason Montgomery, you know, is lefty. Ty Johnson's a righty. Yeah. So I don't want to make it sound like they're the same. But I wrote Mason Montgomery for the Rays every year for years where it was like, you know, hey, he's got a really good fastball. It really gets swings and misses. But we don't know if the secondaries are going to be ones to turn over a lineup multiple times. And eventually that's what happened to Mason Montgomery. He goes to the pen. I know he just brought back down, but I think it was more of like they needed healthy arms. He's optionable, but he's been in the rotation, in the bullpen, I should say, all year. He's throwing a lot harder now. In Johnson's case, I would say the changeup's kind of the very rudimentary pitch for him that hasn't really developed. I don't know if it's going to develop, but at the same time, he has a fastball. He has breaking balls that do work, especially if he's turning over a lineup once, especially if he's going to be a guy who pitches, you know, we're talking three, four, six, seven batters kind of thing. That's kind of what I would say is holding them back from moving up further on the rankings for them is he's probably a little bit more relieverish than he is starterish, even if he is a starter right now. But he is a guy who's definitely having success, definitely showing that he can make now double-A hitters miss, you know, he can miss double-A hitters' bats. That's what you're looking for in a guy. Sure. And as a guy who's definitely moving up in that Rays organization.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's a smooth arm action. It's you know, kind of hitchy in terms of how it moves, but it's a really weird angle. And I think that angle is what allows sort of the fastball slider mix, that all that to sort of play because of the deception. But it also might mean that he's limited in terms of what he can add to that arsenal, right? You don't want to take away a guy's superpower, which is often why these guys maybe end up in a relief role, just because they do have that sort of roadblock.
And I would say also that's where this has changed, I think, nowadays. Like, that kind of role is more valued than a number five starter nowadays.
Yeah.
Like, it used to be that you would say, like, no, anything other than your closer is less valued than a starting, in the rotation starting pitcher. But nowadays, I would say that you have multiple higher leverage relievers per team that, and just get, to be honest, get paid more also than the guy who's, if you're a five starter who's not, like, again, the Rays are example right now who actually has five plus starters. Joe Boyle just came up to be a bulk guy for them, and he would start for most teams right now, I think. But for most of these teams, like, that number five starter is really more of a less important role than being that eighth inning guy, that second reliever, that like, again, like the Brewers, you know, we have, like, what is Abner Abreu's role? Like, Abner Abreu is more value than a number five starter, I would say.
Yeah, and I think, you know, especially high-end relievers, when we start to get into, like, the top 10 relievers in the game, and if they're under team control, if they're under 26, 27 years old, those guys are kind of 60 value. If we're really looking at, like, what teams, pro teams value, that's a plus. That's a plus role.
I mean, you do more fantasy stuff for us, obviously, than I do.
Yeah.
The thing that jumps out now is, now I would say most teams aren't looking for a closer and then a seventh inning guy and an eighth inning guy. they want to have what I would describe as multiple, like the Twins have, you know, their John, you know, Yoan Gran and Griffin Jack.
Yes, exactly.
The Brewers have, you know, like I said, like most teams have this, like where you were talking about two or three relievers, you're like, these are our, the game is on the line relievers, and they're going to get us from the seventh through the ninth.
Yeah, and they're usually guys that can get strikeouts and swings and misses and are going to throw enough strikes.
Okay.
Kratz, we talk about HelloFresh a lot, but in the same fam is another option for you if you're looking to go on your little wellness journey or you're very picky in terms of what you're looking for ingredients-wise. You can go Green Chef this summer.
And I can heat and eat because this summer I've got like 3 days where I'm not doing anything. I'm sure those are going to get scheduled with something. Let's give me something super quick that I can heat up. The whole family's eating healthy and they're full.
Menus change weekly. 80 plus dietitian approved weekly meal options. Green Chef makes it easy to find those meals to fit your lifestyle. So go check it out. FT fam, there is an exclusive offer. Make this summer your healthiest yet with Green Chef. Head to greenchef.com/50territory. And use code 50territory to get 50% off your first month, then 20% off for 2 months with free shipping. That's code 50territory at greenchef.com/50territory.
So that kicks it back to you, and I'm letting you pronounce
this. All right. It's Ishan Henderson. It's I-X-A-N. He is a left-handed pitcher from the Cardinals. Fresno State guy, spent a couple of years there. His first team, actually, All Mountain West in 22 and 23, was a 23 draftee. Had a really good season last year, but it was across a couple levels of A-ball. So, you know, there's always some skepticism with a college starter, especially a lefty who has a diverse arsenal, and how those guys are going to necessarily play once they get up to the higher levels. Well, let me tell you, since he's got up to the Texas League, he has really performed. Velocity's up a little bit. It's like 92 to 94. I'd say it's more 3 to 4. You'll see a 5, 6, 7 out of him when he really, really ramps it up. It's like average ride, so 15 to sort of 17, 18 inches in a given start, which is enough to ride it. It's enough to keep your four-seam fastball and have it be effective. His fastball command is excellent, really, really high zone rates, kind of stays out of problematic zones, and he's got four different secondaries that he plays off of it. It's a sweepier slider with some decent power on it. I'd say it's an above-average pitch. Has a decent changeup that's kind of splittery in terms of shape. It's like lower spin rates in like the 1200 area. So I don't know if it's a straight splitter, but it really looks like one and kind of plays like one. As a lefty, that's obviously important for right-handed batters. He'll mix that in left-on-left situations as well. Also breaks in a curveball that's mostly used against right-handed batters as sort of like a secondary look besides the sweep or something that moves down. And then he has a cutter as a bridge pitch that kind of sits really effectively between the fastball and the slider, sort of keep guys off of that, and it gets not a lot of swings and misses, but a lot of ground balls and bad contacts.
Explain that to someone if you're hearing bridge pitch and they haven't like been following. Kind of like,
sure.
like it is a fascinating thing to me. I was writing up a Mariners reliever who very much was like, oh, they have the sweeper, they have the cutter, they have this, you know, the slider that's really a bridge pitch because it's just like so you don't end up having two pitches that are so clearly distinct from each other
exactly.
that either becomes instantly recognized.
Yeah, and I think it happens when guys have arsenals like this where there's like defined arm side and glove side movement. So like the sweeper is going to have a lot of glove side movement. The fastball is going to have a fair amount of arm side movement. The splitter and curveball are a little... They have some arm glove side on the curveball, little arm side on that splitter, but they're going to drop a lot more. So you're thinking four seam up, you know, the splitter and the curveball down, and then, you know, you have the changeup that goes right, or excuse me, the fastball that's kind of moving a little bit to the arm side, the changeup probably, or splitter probably is as well. And then you throw that cutter in between, and cutters by definition, especially like clear cutters, like not sort of blended gyro slider cutters. We do see some of those where it has some ride and very little arm side run and very little, horizontal or glove side break. So it sort of sits in the middle and doesn't move a whole lot one direction or the other horizontally. So it's sort of perfect for a guy like this to sit in between the fastball and that sweeper and create some deception because it's coming in looking very similar to either the fastball or to the sweeper in terms of velocity, because it's more in like the high 80s.
And so then you're all of a sudden putting that doubt in a hitter's head. Exactly. Am I trying to, you know, if this is the fastball, I'm trying to adjust for that. Put the barrel is going to be a little different than if it is for the sweeper or it is for the cutter. And all of a sudden, you're kind of caught in between.
And it's often a cutter or a gyro slider that's used as a bridge pitch. It's not going to be something like a splitter or something like that. Or even a two-seam fastball. It's going to be a cutter or a gyro pitch that doesn't have a lot of defined movement to one way or the one direction or the other. And, you know, I think a big part of that is also it kind of is easy to command those pitches, that they don't have a whole lot of movement like a sweeper where you sort of have to make sure you're landing it at, you know, one side of the plate or the other. It's easier to kind of command that and keep it into similar zones to, you know, your fastball, I'll say.
So this next one, I'm going to start, but you're welcome to join in as well, because I think we both wanted to talk about him, which is Edward Florentino, outfielder for the Pirates, who started off in the Florida Complex League and pretty much pillaged his way out of that league very quickly. I think it was a 192 weighted runs created plus, which is 92% above average for the league. So, yeah. You know, has been hitting so far after his promotion as well. There's a lot here to like from the power side, I think, and there's a lot to like from just that. There's some bat to ball skills. Like the hit tool's probably not as advanced as you know, as maybe the batting average and all may indicate right now. Mark Chiarelli does a great job doing the Pirates for us. He wrote it up basically like defensively, a lot of work to do. Probably a corner outfielder. You're hoping he's just fine out there. However, the offensive profile here, if you're a Pirates fan and you're listening to this, and I say, hey, there's this outfield prospect. We're not talking about Connor Griffin right now. There's this outfield prospect in the Pirates organization who could end up being an above-average power hitter in the big leagues, long ways away. I would imagine that's something that's getting Pirates fans pretty excited, because they haven't had a whole lot of those guys in recent years.
Yeah, I would think having someone in addition to Connor Griffin that you can be excited about in sort of all avenues, whether it's reality, just as a fan, a prospect fan, a Pirates fan, or even from a fantasy perspective, I think this is one of the more exciting players that's come off of the complex so far. In terms of leaving the actual.
Which, by the way, speaking of that, you know, baseballamerica.com, Josh Norris has already finished a tour of the Arizona Complex League. We have Jesus Cano out there as well. Josh just also went to the FCL. You know, he's working on DSL coverage right now as well. So I just want to point out, like, if you are interested in who popped in the Florida Complex League, in the Arizona Complex League, and in the Dominican Summer League, like, that's what we're working on right now. We will have top prospect lists for those, you know, this league. FCL and ACL are wrapping up real soon. Mm-hmm. Still crazy for me to think about that.
Yeah, it's crazy that it ends this early. You know, I was thinking about that a couple weeks ago. It's like, this is almost over in a month.
So next up is one of yours again, and it's a Cub.
It's Jackson Wiggins, and I'll say this. I think Wiggins is sort of in a position to be considered for the next top 100 update. And I think if he continues to do what he's doing in AA, understanding the background with Wiggins a little bit, you know, was highly touted when he first went to campus at Arkansas, spent a year or so in the bullpen, you know, sophomore season starts, ERA is in the sixes in the SEC, he gets slammed, gets injured, has Tommy John surgery, misses his junior year, comes back last year after getting drafted in 23, makes his debut kind of late, and the signs were good. In this Cubs system in particular, a guy like this will rise because the top end is really good, the back end not so good in terms of players that have established themselves. He came out this year, was awesome in the Midwest League over the first few months, which we see that happen. You know, he's made 7 starts now with AA Tennessee, or excuse me, Knoxville now, and the numbers are great. The command has been better. I mean, it's...
Whenever we need to hire someone at Baseball America, we know who we need. Indeed. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Why do we use Indeed at Baseball America? Because it gets our position in front of qualified candidates. And it also allows us to do everything we need to make a hire, all within Indeed. Plus, with Indeed-sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts. You only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In this minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now. And by doing so, you're supporting our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on our podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring, Indeed, is all you need. Did you know your calendar age doesn't always match how old your body truly is? It's true. Your biological age, the age of your cells and organs, is actually the number one predictor of your risk for serious diseases like heart disease, cancer, dementia, and more. That's why learning your biological age can be truly life-changing, and that's exactly what the True Age Test from True Diagnostic helps you do. With just a simple at-home test, you can uncover your true biological age and get personalized insights into your true biological age and take control of your health like never before. No doctor's visits, no labs, just a quick finger prick from the comfort of your home. I recently ordered the test myself because I really wanted to get a clearer picture of my long-term health. It was eye-opening to learn that if your biological age is just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk for major diseases can go up by 30 to 50%. That's a huge wake-up call for me. But here's the good news, and this is the part that really inspired me. Up to 90% of biological aging is driven by lifestyle. That means the way we eat, move, sleep, and manage stress plays a massive role in how fast or slow our bodies age. True Diagnostic doesn't just tell you your biological age. It gives you a personalized report full of clear, science-backed steps you can take to actually slow down aging and improve your health over time. I'm really excited to see what our results will say and what I can do differently to better support my body as I age. It may be I'm adjusting my sleep. It may be changing supplements. It may be making smarter food choices or exercising more. It feels empowering to know that aging isn't just something that happens. It's something that we have control of. The test itself is super easy. Just a quick, painless finger prick. You send in your sample using a prepaid mailer, and in 2 to 3 weeks, you get a detailed online report with actionable insights that you can use. If you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code BASEBALL to get 20% off your entire order of subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use BASEBALL at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
Still a 10, 11% walk rate, so that factors into it. There is still some command. Some of it is he tries to chase, he gets swings above the zone. And I think when you start to dig into some of the batted ball data, really high infield fly ball rate, like unusually high infield fly ball rate. Which is a really good sign, especially when it's a four-seam guy like this that can ride it.
So basically what's happening is he may not be getting above fast enough for swings and misses, but you really, I actually was a fun social media debate recently where someone, I apologize for not remembering who it was, but someone was doing a version of FIP, but they treated infield flies, infield pop-ups, like strikeouts, because they're like,
yeah,
that's really pretty equivalent.
It really is. And I think, you know, you look at that, it's almost the ground balls of the four-seamers and four-seam sort of fastball guys, and it might be even better, because as you said, the batting average on balls in play on ground balls versus infield fly balls is significantly different.
Pretty much the batting average on infield fly balls is zero. Because yes, even if it lands, it's an error, and that's still zero.
Exactly. So I think you see that, and that's one of the reasons that explains the really low batting averages against. It's 154 this year. It's 163 at the AA level. And obviously, he continues to get strikeouts. He's 6'6". He's big. He's strong. He's showing to get deeper into starts now and be more efficient and effective. It's not just strikeouts all the time, though. The strikeout stuff is certainly there. It's a 30.6% strikeout rate, 31.4 since he's gone up to AA. So I think he's a guy that I guess technically is a sleeper. He's up to 5 in this system now, but he's right on the cusp of the top 100 guys in this system. Just behind Alcantara, who's just off the list, and then Rojas, Casey, and Ballesteros are still on in terms of Cubs. So it's an interesting arm, and I think one that, you know, he could jump Kevin Alcantara, or Alcantara could get traded in the next month. It's all possible.
That's an organization we may talk about next week. We're going to do some trade deadline prospect preview stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the Cubs are definitely one that we need to talk about for that. Okay, another one, another fun one that I want to talk about is Nate George, who, speaking of guys who kind of jumped out of the complex, I don't have it in front of me. I'm going computer free right now, but I believe it was 388 in the SCL. Don't hold me to that. Maybe 383, but it was in that range. Mm-hmm. Just hit his way where it's like you can't keep him in the FCL. Promoted to low A, has been, okay, he's not hitting 380 in low A, but it's like 320, 330 most of the time he's been there. I really love watching this guy play. Yeah. Have you caught? I know you watch more MILB TV than anybody. Have you caught him yet?
A little bit, yeah.
When he hits a ball in the gap, he is out of that box as if he's been, they got rocket boosters on. And he tears around the bases. Like, he had a week where he had multiple triples, I think maybe even three triples, and all of them were stand-up. Like, and I don't mean as in stand-up as in, like, the outfielder fell down or anything. I mean as in, like, he can really run, and because he's so quick out of the box, because he's really cutting the corners, on, like, runs the bases really well. But I don't want to make it sound like he's just a fast guy, because he is fast, but he can hit. There's a little bit of there's a chance for him to do a lot of things well here. You know, he is a high school cold weather high school draftee who hasn't been playing pro ball very long. He looks, to be honest, you wouldn't really, like, as you watch him play, you wouldn't be like, oh, this guy's behind his California and Florida and Texas peers a whole lot. Doesn't look like that, but at the same time, like, I would say there still is some more development potential here from the standpoint of, there are less at-bats under his belt than there are for a guy who, you know, again, California, you play year-round, things like that. But just as a guy for the Orioles who really has been, I would say, there actually have been, I know Orioles fans, I get it. Like, I completely understand if you're an Orioles fan, you're like, this year's been a disaster. I get that at the big league level. And I would also say I can understand where there's been some frustration that at the upper levels, you know, you've had guys like Chase McDermott has really taken a step back this year. Kate Povich has been hurt. Like some guys who they were kind of in that, hey, they're starting to count on these guys group. But at the lower levels, obviously, we talked, I think, a little bit last week about Esteban Mejia, who's kind of jumped up. Nate George is another one. There's some other pitchers. I know Braxton Bragg just went back on the IL, but Trey Gibson, who we've talked about. Keeler Morfe, who is a... Keeler Morfe is like, when you say, well, what's the risk reward here? It's like, the risk is essentially you are juggling with, like, he's lit dynamite here, you know?
He's extreme plus.
Right.
I would put that role, like, extreme isn't even enough in terms of a risk profile.
Right. He throws really hard. He can miss bats. He can also miss the strike zone by a foot and a half. You know, there's a lot there. He's back on the mound now after a finger injury. I am hopeful that the finger injury... He's never thrown. He's never been Greg Maddux out there, you know, paying zone. But his struggles early in the season, he did have a finger injury that cost him multiple months. So there is hope that was, you know, like, we're going to see a little bit more from him. But there are a number of Orioles guys, I would say, at the lower levels who are interesting to kind of keep an eye on. But speaking of guys in the lower levels that are interesting to keep an eye on, you've got one.
Yeah, and it feels like the Red Sox have a few of these guys. But I think the biggest standout in terms of breakouts this year in the system, and they've become somewhat notorious for this at this point. It feels like every year there's two or three guys that break out. But it's Dorian Soto, who was their top signing out of the Dominican Republic last year, outfielder. You know, really hitting. The numbers kind of speak for themselves down in the Dominican Summer League. The reports are backing it as well. And I think that's the thing that we're always looking for when we do start to move up some of these DSL guys after a month or two is, what are scouts saying? You know, what's the performance like, and then what's the underlying data?
Can I interject on that? Because, like, our helium this week was a hot sheet, was a Marlins prospect, and who has an 18-3 walk to strikeout ratio. Not strikeout to walk ratio. He's walked 18 times. He's struck out 3 times.
Yeah.
That's a stat you only see in the DSL.
Yes, exactly. And so there's always some flukiness to the numbers, but... Looking underneath the hood, looking at data, we've had 4 or 5 years now. We've had enough track record, at least myself looking at DSL data, that Junior Caminero, who's now an all-star, you know, is somebody that we saw in terms of DSL numbers and were able to sort of pick out as being a standout. Kind of similar stuff. So it's hitting the ball pretty hard, you know, like 101-ish sort of 90th percentile, which for a 17-year-old that just signed months ago is really, really impressive. The bat-to-ball ability is there. Low zone whiff. The chase is not low, but not super high. And when you look at the contact rates and everything else, and knowing what the DSL is like. It's kind of like Little League, where your best hitters are probably not walking all that much, because when they see a meatball over the plate, they're going to crush it. So that's what we're getting with Soto. I think he's a guy that could move up the Red Sox list even more. He's up to 13 in a really talented system. And, you know, so far the reports, everything we've heard back, is it's kind of all systems go. This could be a top 100 guy in the making.
We're keeping a little bit tighter this week on the podcast because we have other things we have to do today. But we've gone through some of the sleepers, and we're kind of going to keep doing this right now.
Yeah.
Because we're going to prospect soapboxes, as we do every week on this. We talk about guys who are non-top 100 prospects who we want to talk about. I'll start with one, because you just did Soto as your last sleeper. So I'll start. It's a twin. And this is a guy who was prominent, and I would say kind of disappeared for a little while, but now he's back, which is Gabriel Gonzalez, who is in Double-A Wichita, last I, again, if memory serves. But Gonzalez was one of the key players, well, one of the multiple players, in that Mariners Twins trade a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. Jorge Polanco went to the Mariners. Anthony DeSclafani, who, if you said, was he a twin? Like, kind of, but I don't think, you know, he pretty much went on the IL almost immediately, was kind of, you know, so that. And then Justin Topa, who also went on the IL also immediately, but in his case, at least in Topa's case, is now pitching for the Twins. But Gabriel Gonzalez was the prospect involved in that deal. And he's always been kind of thought of as a corner outfielder with a pretty good bat. We didn't get to see that last year. Like, it was a little heavier, but also probably more importantly, back injury that really kind of, backs are terrible things for a hitter. You know, like back injuries are really rough. He's healthier again, slimmed down a little bit this year, and he's hitting again. I would say that there's still reason to be like, okay, this is a good sign, right? Like, we want to see a little bit more of this and all, but he's absolutely far from where he was at this time last year, where it was like, what's going on with this guy? Like, he's really hitting. He always has had a decent ability to draw walks as well. There's real, like, it's kind of, he goes in between being a hitter with power and being a slugger who can hit. I would say that he's on that line. That's a good thing. It's not a terrible thing to be able to do a little bit of both.
Yeah. And the bat's going to have to carry the profile because it's bad out there in the outfield. Yes. And it is I'll say a stumpy body.
Yes, it is not. You. When I say slim down, I don't want to make it sound like stumped. You know, like I can say this as someone who's not, no one has ever described me as stumped.
In spring training, we actually nicknamed him the Rizzler because he's, looks very similar in build to the internet sensation, the Rizzler.
Right, but he does hit. You know,
he does.
So
he is the Rizzler.
That is my prospect. My prospect soapbox for this week. What about you, Jeff?
I mentioned earlier when we were talking, actually, our first sleeper in Bryce Meyer. Another Astros guy, Kevin Alvarez, and I think really what my prospect soapbox is here is this is truly
an. You're giving a sneak peek here.
This is a prospect to get really excited about, and I felt as if. He's at 6, okay? So I still have him behind Walker Yannick for now. I still have him behind Furcucci for now.
Let me ask it this way. You have him behind Walker Yannick for now, who has, since he came back from injury,
Has hit a little bit.
Who was our first-round pick last year?
It was Yannick.
I'm saying, but if I pumped you full of truth serum right now and said which prospect are you more optimistic about?
Yeah, I think from an optimism perspective, you could rank Alvarez 1 now. And I think as more reports come in and we get more than a 22-game sample size to sort of sink our teeth into, which is the big problem.
This is the challenge we're facing. Yes. Like, I just got done with our hot sheet chat before this, and someone's asking about Nestor Miranda for the Tigers. Is like, is he showing the power that we expected? You know, because he had a bad year last year in the DSL, and he's had a good year so far this year. It's like, it's 11 games. I don't know if I can really say anything conclusively about anybody if you give me 11 games to speak of. It's 22 games with Alvarez.
Yeah, so 22 games. I mean, highly touted sounding out of Cuba. There's always been some risk the last few years with some of the Cuban players that come over, but he's really young, 17 years old, kind of average age for a signee. There's some defensive ability. I don't think he ends up playing center long-term. I think it's more of a right field, corner outfield kind of profile.
But he's not the Rizzler.
No, exactly. He's going to be able to actually play out there. He's getting reps out in center field now. There's hit tool here with some power, and I think he hasn't even tapped into all the power that he can get to. It's probably plus raw. maybe a little bit more. But the numbers over those 22 games, 342, 422, 534, two home runs. He's got 9 strikeouts to 6 walks and 4 hit-by-pitches. So that kind of shows you what DSL pitching is like, that he has 4 hit-by-pitches. So if you factor those in, he's actually walked, sort of, more times than he struck out.
By the way, it is on my bucket list to go down to the Dominican at some point, you know, see baseball in the Dominican. At the same time, if you wanted to talk right now about the... If you miss 5-hour games, if you're like... This stupid pitch clock, the game moves too fast for me. The DSL is for you.
Yes, exactly. Stream those games.
3 hours, 45 normal per game. I've seen examples in recently of 4+ hours. There was a 10-inning game that went 5-10. 10 innings, 5 hours, 10 minutes. If you want to see innings where it's like, wait, that's two pitchers in a row who literally had no idea like where the strike zone was at all, that's the DSL for you.
Yes.
You know, 100%. It's a different level.
Yeah, but interesting player. So Kevin Alvarez, check him out if he's available and you're in a deep enough fantasy league. So 200+ players, I would go add this.
Right. Guy. The thing about it is what you're saying here is like, this is where this all gets challenging. If you're talking about dynasty leagues, things like that. Is the likelihood for him way lower? Like, we're talking about him versus Walker Yannick, right?
Sure.
Walker Yannick, the chances of who's going to be a big leaguer, I would say Yannick's is still higher. He is a catcher who has defensive skills to reach the big leagues.
Yeah, but I think the chances of one of them becoming a 60 is probably higher than Alvarez if you kind of scaled out those probabilities.
Right, that's what we're saying here is that we know that people are, again, that's where the challenge, exactly. That's the thing, like I did kind of want to end this, you mentioned like Jackson Wiggins moving on to the 100. I was having a conversation with a BA subscriber yesterday who was nice enough to kind of point out when we put up the 30s, there was some Phillies issues, so I called him to let him know that those got fixed. And we're talking about it, and we're talking about Aaron Escobar. And I made the point with that. I was like, the thing that's always tough about this is the difference between the guy who's 75, 85, 95 on this list and the guy who's 150, who's 50 spots off this list, infinitesimal.
Very small.
The difference between the guy who's 10 on this list and 50, it is actually, to me, way easier for us to line up. Not, okay, you could say this guy's 2 versus 3.
Sure.
But the guys who are in the top 10, you don't get feedback generally from other, you know, from scouts who are like, that guy's not a top 50 prospect of the game.
Exactly.
They may be like, I like this guy better.
Sure.
But they're the guys who are all in that range.
That top tier is easy to pick out, I think. It slaps you in the face a little more.
But when you talk about, like, when we get questions like, why is so-and-so not on the 100 yet? Because I think he should be on instead of so-and-so. And it's like, yeah, you could be 100% right. And sometimes it's a little bit what you're valuing, right? Like, do you want the shortstop with good defense? Do you want to, like...
And it can even be in the same profile. And it's just, it's small and it's kind of how the lists line up, where it's like Jonathan Long versus CJ Cephas. You can probably make a case for Jonathan Long, you know, over Cephas. And you can make a case for Cephas over Long. And they're, you know, Long is probably 140 and Cephas is 91 or whatever.
He's hitting like 65 now, I think. But like, but still, exactly. Like that's that difference is, and that's where especially when you talk about like Carson Williams, who slid down our list. Mm-hmm. And maybe we went too far. Because like I think about it and I'm like, okay, wait, Taylor Walls, depending on which war metric you want to look at, is like a productive player for the Mariners, and Taylor Walls is a guy who he can't hit.
Yeah.
You know, well, Carson Williams is a really good defender at shortstop, and he has real power.
Yep.
He's just striking out 30%+ of the time.
Exactly.
And so that's the concern with the hit tool. But that's easier, though. Shortstops, center fielders, those guys are easier to figure out. When you talk about, like you said, Jonathan Long, CJ Cephas, you're not about first baseman. The difference between being a first baseman who spends 8+ years, 10+ years in the majors and being that guy who gets cups of coffee and 200 at-bats at times, the difference between, like, okay, Jonathan Long. The difference between is Jonathan Long, is he going to be Matt Mervis, which means cup of coffee, but mainly a AAA guy, or at least that's what it looks like with Mervis right now, who was kind of where Jonathan Long was a few years ago production-wise, at the same team, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or is he going to be a guy like Rowdy Tellez, who I would describe as being just on the other side of that border where it's like Rowdy's probably got what, 4 plus 5 years of service time now?
Yeah. Like with like three different teams.
That line is really small. Like we're not talking about the line between Pete Alonso and Matt Mervis. We're talking about that line between Ty France and Rowdy Tellez.
Yeah.
And the guys were like, he played 4 or 5 years at first base. Dominic Smith versus Jake Bowers, who we used to debate all the time.
Yeah.
And there's been right answers at different times that keep going back and forth. At one point, it's like, oh, Dominic Smith clearly was, you know, the ended up being the better. And now it's Jake Bowers, who has stuck around longer than Dominic Smith. Yeah. Those are kind of
funny. Yeah. It's funny. It's like you know, there's so many different ways you can break it down and so many different ways things can go, too.
100%. An injury at the wrong time, an opportunity at the right time.
Organization, whatever it might be. Yeah, you know.
Being in the right organization who's able to unlock something for you that someone else could.
Even being around certain major leaguers that can maybe unlock something for you. Like I Mark Vientos talks about how important J.D. Martinez, you know, being with the Mets organization was for him breaking out and taking a step forward. J.D. Martinez leaves and he's taking a step backward this year. So, you know, all that stuff can matter too. You know, there's stuff we don't even think about sometimes.
But so there's a lot more coming. We're going to, you know, like I said, we will be podcasting. Our next podcast, Prospect Podcast, will be from Atlanta.
Yeah.
Because we will be done with the Futures Game at that point. We'll probably talk about the Futures Game a good bit, I would imagine, on the next one. We also have the draft coming up. We have so much stuff over at baseballamerica.com right now. We also encourage you to check out everything that we have on the YouTube channel. If you're watching this, you're probably going to enjoy the staff draft that we just did. I'll put a link on that if you're watching on YouTube right now. So for Jeff Ponce, I'm JJ Cooper. So long, everybody. Sweet.
All right, there we go. Oh.
We made that work.
Yeah, I think so.
Let me sit. Stops. So stop on.
I won't touch that camera. I'll let you do your thing.
Stop on that.
I was about to hit the record off button and was like, I'll let him do that.
Stop on that.